The warm days of summer are good for lots of things, but not all of those things are good for us. Case in point, warm water that's easy to swim in is also water that is more conducive to the growth of things that can harm us, like blooms of algae that release toxins. You probably noticed the stories about harmful blooms that have become more frequent in recent years. Last year, Salem, Oregon's capital city, had to put out warnings about its water supply after a big bloom in a reservoir. The Environmental Working Group compiled incidents like that from state and federal figures. EWG put all those incidents on a map, and there are lots of those incidents. Two guests join us from the Environmental Working Group. Soren Rundquist is the director of spatial imagery for EWG and the author of a report on microcystins, the toxins we're talking about here. Soren, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you for having me.
We also have with us Ann Weir Schekinger, the Environmental Working Group's Senior Economic Analyst and Toxic Algae Expert. Thank you for joining us, Ann.
Happy to be here.
So let's start with what's going on. First, some terminology. When we talk about algae blooms, are they all algae, Ann?
So algae blooms, or blue-green algae, are actually microscopic organisms called cyanobacteria. And these cyanobacteria sometimes release toxins into water bodies. So these bacteria are actually created when nutrients like phosphorus and nitrogen mix with rain, heat, and sunlight and water. So mostly we're talking about bacteria and not actually algae.
All right. So cyanobacteria produces microcystin?
Correct. Microcystin and a number of other cyanotoxins can be produced by these cyanobacteria.
And what does microcystin do, Soren Rundquist?
Well, microcystin is it's the most commonly studied cyanotoxin, and it can be poisonous. It can affect human liver function, and it can also irritate skin, eyes, and throat. And it can be very deadly in some cases with animals, pets, livestock, and wildlife.
And is microcystin just the most powerful toxin of concern, or are there some others that are also troubling?
No, not necessarily. There are various other cyanotoxins, but microcystin was the focus of this report, largely in part because it was the most commonly studied cyanotoxin, and it's kind of the most popular in terms of testing and monitoring. And as you probably know, it became infamous for shutting down drinking water for about 500,000 people in Toledo, Ohio, in 2014, which is a city that draws its source water for drinking from Lake Erie.
And what is going on in places like Lake Erie? I mean, Lake Erie certainly had a terrible reputation at the dawn of the Clean Air, Clean Water Act age, and has improved quite a bit. But what's going on there now?
Well, yeah, as Ann noted, these algal blooms, which produce cyanobacteria and thus cyanotoxins in some cases, are really being exacerbated by nutrient loading becoming more prevalent, in particular from agricultural landscapes, stormwater runoff, and insufficient septic, to name a few, coupled with warming temperatures and increased frequency in rain. It's kind of making the perfect storm for these algal blooms to develop and in some cases become toxic.
So, Ann Weir Schekinger, when we talk about the nutrient loading, I mean, it seems like we've been talking about that for quite a long time now, about the fertilizer runoff, that sort of thing. And so I guess I would have thought by now there'd be greater attempts to reduce that runoff. Is it increasing over time?
Yeah, this has been a problem for quite a long time, but we haven't seen a whole lot of things being done on the landscape with regards to agriculture as a source for this nitrogen and phosphorus. So the big issue in the Lake Erie watershed is that over the last 20 or so years, we've seen a lot more animal feeding operations popping up in that area. So we're actually seeing more manure being applied to the landscape, which causes more phosphorus and nitrate to run off into Lake Erie and cause these algae blooms. So at the same time that some areas like Lake Erie and other areas in the Midwest are seeing more animal operations, we're also seeing not any more conservation practices necessarily applied to agriculture that can stop this flow of chemicals into the water. So we aren't really seeing a whole lot of regulations that are going on the landscape to stop any kind of chemicals from getting into the water. So the problem's been around for a while, and we're really seeing it get worse, and we're not seeing any regulation really stepping in to help the problem.
So the maintaining of the keeping the stuff out of the water is really a farm by farm kind of thing?
Yeah, right now in most of the Midwest, if you want to employ a conservation practice onto your farm field, like planting cover crops, which is a crop that keeps the soil in place over the winter when normally nothing's planted there, then you do that voluntarily. So you can get some money for it from the government, and that is your choice as a farmer to put that conservation practice on the landscape. But there's no real government mandate telling farmers, you know, we really need you to do this. Right now it's all voluntary. So you can voluntarily put these conservation practices into the farm, but then you can also voluntarily take them out whenever you want.
And the result then is that you have all these nutrients in the water that the cyanobacteria, it promotes the growth of the cyanobacteria, gives them food essentially?
Yeah, exactly. So the cyanobacteria really come about when these nitrogen and phosphorus chemicals mix with a lot of precipitation, as well as heat and sunlight in water bodies. So the more nutrients you have, the larger and more frequent algae blooms you're going to have. So unless we can stop this tide of nutrients into water, we're not going to see these algae blooms go away anytime soon.
Harmful algae blooms are the topic here on the Jefferson Exchange with Ann Weir-Schekinger and Soren Rundquist from the Environmental Working Group. They have put out a report and some information on maps as well that help tell the story. All available online. We're connected to it through our website at jeffexchange.org. You can join the conversation right here, right now on the Jefferson Exchange. Thoughts about harmful algae blooms and if you've had any encounters with them yourself. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Soren, what did you do here in mapping out the data, and where did the data come from?
That's a great question. I'll start by noting that EWG had begun tracking the frequency of algal blooms via news stories, as there is no national monitoring for algal blooms as of yet. And in doing so, we wanted to kind of get to the root of this issue by determining how toxic these blooms are. In some cases, you know, the algae is not toxic. There's no evidence of cyanobacteria. But in a lot of cases, it is toxic. And a good proxy for that toxicity was, again, the cyanotoxin, specifically microcystin. And what we found was every 5 years, the EPA does what they call a National Lake Assessment, which is a statistical survey designed to track more or less the health of lakes across America. In doing so, they're tracking a variety of other things like habitat and other water quality parameters. But in one of the specific parameters they test for is microcystin. And the previous publicly available test was in 2012. And what they found in difference from the 2007 survey was they found microcystin detected in around 39% of all sampled lakes, which was up over 9% from the previous survey. However, that survey is done every 5 years, and 2012 was the last available data. The 2017 survey has not been released by the EPA as of today. So in doing kind of tracking this trend or this uptick in toxicity of these algal blooms, we actually looked state by state to see if the state had any monitoring program for this specific toxin. And what we found out of the 50 states were 20 states actually monitor for microcystin and make those data public. And of those 20 states, we were able to attain data from 14 states in 2018. And what we found there, it's not apples to apples with the National Lake Assessment in terms of the same lake being sampled, but basically, we found that, you know, in the 14 states that had recent data, they are finding, you know, elevated levels of microcystin in public waterways, in public lakes.
So it sounds like you're working on the assumption or getting close to it that if you look for it, you're going to find it?
That's right. That's right. And in some cases, there's actual, you know, numeric thresholds in terms of when an advisory is put into place for, you know, the toxicity of this algal bloom. Whether it's toxic or not, you'll probably find it.
I know this is a bit of an aside, Soren, but we just had a segment before you about public records. I'm curious about the six states that do monitor but didn't give you data.
That was more of a lack of kind of organization for their monitoring data. And that's another thing we're finding is that there needs to be a little more standardization at a state level to get kind of all these different entities and authorities in concert for staying on top of this issue. Like, you know, if it's a public lake, but it's managed by a local municipality, or if it's managed by a state Department of Natural Resources, it's getting all those folks to be talking together and standardizing those data would greatly help individuals living in around these lakes have a little more transparency into the issue.
Ann Weir Schekender, which bodies of water are most prone to these blooms?
So we see these algae blooms mostly in lakes across the country, but then there's also some incidents, especially more recently, of these blooms in rivers even, and there's quite a few incidences now on coasts. So this year, the state of Mississippi had to close all of their beaches along the Gulf Coast because the Gulf had a huge blue-green algae bloom. So we see them mostly in lakes, but they're kind of becoming ubiquitous in all bodies of water now.
So the idea that it just has to be standing water is no longer true?
Nope. It can be running water or standing water or even now, you know, in the ocean.
And, you know, I've heard of incidents in the past. In fact, I think there was one recorded in Oregon just a few years ago where there was a growth in a puddle and somebody's dog lapped up the water because it was thirsty and died.
Yeah, we see a lot of incidences in really small water bodies now. There's a lot of ponds that have algae blooms. And then just a few weeks ago, a pond in North Carolina actually had an algae bloom and killed three dogs. So it can be kind of anywhere. You really have to be on the lookout for these blooms.
All right. So it sounds like people really need to make sure they check out a body of water before they play in it, let their dogs play in it, let their dogs drink from it, and all that stuff.
Definitely. You want to be aware of what's in your water before you go in or before you let your pets go in.
Our guests are Ann Weir Schekender and Soren Rundquist from the Environmental Working Group. We're talking about the increasing rate of blooms of harmful algae, which is actually cyanobacteria, as it turns out. We're looking specifically at the toxin microcystin excreted by the cyanobacteria. Join our conversation on the exchange. You must have questions, comments about what's going on with algal blooms. Join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Ann in Eugene. Welcome back to the exchange.
Thank you. So anyway, this is all about the over-application of chemicals in agriculture, and that goes back to the chemical companies, which goes back to billions for billionaires. And no Republican administration is going to do anything about cutting back on billions for billionaires. And in fact, this administration is doing everything it can to disobey the federal rules and congressional laws that have been passed that would allow the government to make rules about how much of these things can be used. And it's not only things like Lake Erie. It's things like the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico, because all this stuff goes into the Mississippi River and runs down and creates this huge dead zone every summer in the Gulf of Mexico. Thank you.
Thank you, Ann in Eugene. Ann at EWG, this seems to fall into your alley as we talk about billions for billionaires as the senior economic analyst at Environmental Working Group. What is Ann onto something here, billions for billionaires and the lack of alacrity in regulation?
Yeah, I think Ann has a good point. I think we really do need some more regulations around this issue. We can't just let people put whatever manure or fertilizer they want on farm fields and let that run into these water bodies creating algae blooms. So we really need some kind of basic standard of care that farmers can go to really employ conservation on their farm and stop stem the tide of chemicals running off their fields. So she's right. It would be good to have some kind of rules that farmers could follow to really help this issue.
The EPA certainly sets some standards. I mean, states can exceed those in some cases, can't they?
So the EPA doesn't actually regulate algae toxins in drinking water. So there's a new rule from the EPA called the Unregulated Contaminant Monitoring Rule. And so the EPA is making public water systems start to monitor for these cyanotoxins in their drinking water, but there's not actually a specific limit that public water systems have to stick to when it comes to these toxins. So they're starting to look into it, but the EPA doesn't actually have a regulation on the books right now.
All right, so look for it, but we're not going to give you guidelines on how much you should put your should be the maximum.
At this point, no. They have some suggestions on what they think the health limit is, but there isn't a legal limit that these water systems are having to stick to. They're just making these systems monitor it to see if the EPA wants to someday maybe put an actual limit into the rule books.
So Soren Rundquist, talk about the map you devised here that gives us a lot of places to click. And of course, I was clicking all around our region on the map yesterday. What are we looking for here? What are we looking at here?
So yeah, you're looking at two data sets. You're looking at the most recently available National Lake Assessment data, which is 2007 and 2012. And then if your state was collecting monitoring data for microcystin, you would see their most recent values as of 2018. And then you can use the map to kind of dig into your backyard and look and see if there's been any testing in your lake. And in most cases, what you'll find is, you know, there have been testing for microcystin all across the United States, and in most cases, it has been detected. Whether that level is deemed at a health advisory limit or not is up to a certain region or specific spot.
All right. As I look around our region, for example, we've got the purple dots are state data, and the orange ones are national lake assessments, which again, as you pointed out, we don't have the numbers from 2017 yet, so we're looking at 2012 numbers, really.
Yeah.
Well, and on that basis, there was one in particular I looked at. Turned out to be Squaw Lake, which I believe is the Squaw Lake above Applegate Lake, which is out in the woods. I mean, no farms around that I'm aware of. It didn't rise that high, but still showed an increase. I mean, what can we take from that information?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think the research is still ongoing with kind of these blooms that are happening in the middle of forests. And, you know, my limited knowledge has led me to understand that in some cases, degraded forests due to fire, that ash can produce phosphorus, which is essential to growing these algal blooms. So again, coming back to kind of this larger shift in our national climate, you know, we're seeing more forest fires, we're seeing more increased rains on agricultural landscapes and on urban landscapes, and we're seeing the water table rise in areas where there's insufficient septic. I think this problem is going to start affecting everybody, you know, regardless if you're recreating on the water or if you depend on that water for a drinking water supply.
We're talking to Soren Rundquist and Ann Weir Scheckinger at the Environmental Working Group about harmful algae blooms, the increase that appears to be going on with microcystin in particular showing up. It is a neurotoxin showing up from blooms of harmful bacteria in bodies of water around the country. 800-838-3760 if you want to get in by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. And now that we probably freaked everybody out, and give us some guidelines here. Grumpy John and Grants Pass, for example, wants to know if the blooms are all visible.
So the blooms aren't necessarily all visible. Sometimes we found that cyanotoxins like microcystin can actually be produced when you don't see a bloom. So I would definitely tell people that, if you suspect a water body near you has an algae bloom, or just if you're kind of curious if it does, first off, stay out of the water and make sure your pets stay out of the water, and then contact the Oregon Health Authority and see if they've had any reports of blooms in that water body or in blooms nearby.
Yeah, the Oregon Health Authority does have the HAB, Harmful Algae Bloom Program, which makes it fairly easy to get a hold of people. We'll make sure we put that information on our web posting later today. So if you, even for somebody with eyes as sharp as yours who know toxic algae, can you tell the toxic from the non-toxic when a body of water is in bloom, so to speak?
No, so there's no way to tell a bloom is toxic or not toxic unless you actually do testing. So we always say if you see, a scum on the surface of a lake or a river or a stream, or you see something that looks like blue-green spilled paint or even pea soup, then you want to stay out and call your, you know, the Oregon Health Authority in this case, to have them come and test to see if it is toxic, because you can't tell if it's toxic or not just by looking.
All right, so that's on the end of the lake. Now, how about in your tap? I mean, if it happens to show up in your local water supply, can toxins like these be filtered out of drinking water?
Yes, so these toxins can be filtered out of drinking water. A lot of systems like Toledo use granular activated carbon or powdered activated carbon, and that carbon is actually what's in Brita filters and Brita tap filters. So some of these toxins can be filtered out using that process. Now, I'm not going to say that a Brita filter would take all of these cyanotoxins out of water, but it's a chance that those carbon filters could really help with this in drinking water.
So what you mentioned that the EPA is only requesting monitoring, not talking about regulations thus far. So there's no drinking water standards for how much microcystin can or cannot be in your water?
Correct. There are only health guidelines from the EPA. So the EPA set a limit that said that this is the amount of microcystin that we think is probably safe in drinking water, but public water systems don't have to stick to that limit at all. It's not a legally binding limit. So they have some suggestions, and now public water systems have to do some testing for microcystin, but they don't have to actually legally bring that amount of microcystin in the water down to that health guideline.
So, I mean, I imagine you're advocating for setting standards. We have to go in a couple of seconds. What other kinds of action would you like to see happen based on what you're finding here?
So we really want to try to prevent these algae blooms from happening in the first place, because once they show up, it's really hard to get rid of them. So in the longer term, we really want lawmakers in rural areas to mandate basic standards requiring farmers to implement conservation practices to reduce these nutrients running off fields. And in urban areas, state agencies can really increase their monitoring and figure out why these algae blooms are happening and how they can stop them.
All right. All the links available at jeffexchange.org. Ann Weir Schechinger and Soren Rundquist from the Environmental Working Group, thank you for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Take care. That's